You're not here.
We're not there.
I'm not the chauffeur. I'm the grandfather. Where are you?
Asteroid City, Farm Route 6, mile 75.
Last train.
Junior stargazers and space cadets. Each year we celebrate Asteroid Day, commemorating September 23rd, 3007 BC, when the Arid Plains meteorite made Earth impact.
Da, 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 da.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Are you serious?
It's showtime.
Welcome back to Camp Mam. Mam fam, hope you're having a great summer. Get out your mustache wax. Set the typeface to Futura, because we're talking Wes Anderson this week. With me, Kent, hosting with my co-host, Richard. Hey, buddy.
What's going on, man? You're the Roman to my Sofia Coppola. How are you today?
I'm doing excellent, and it would feel weird without you here talking Wes Anderson. I know you're a huge Wes Anderson guy. Brian's at another summer camp. And so pray for Brian as he's dealing with campers in his normal life. But
minions, some would say.
Yeah. We're here to talk Asteroid City. This is a movie that obviously you've been anticipating for a while, but it seems like the masses have too, Richard, because this one seems to be doing quite well at the box office.
Yeah. This has a big cast. Not that he, you know, I think he's definitely a director. A lot of actors and actresses enjoy working with, but or try to work with, but this one's pretty loaded even by his standards, but not so much in the glorified cameo sense, you know, that he'll also do sometimes. Just feels more like an ensemble in a lot of ways. So I think that helped. I think the aesthetic was very summery and fun, and marketing was pretty good. It fit this time of year well. It's, you know, June isn't normally when one thinks of the new Wes Anderson dropping, but certainly kind of fun that it is. And yeah, it had a real interesting aesthetic. There's also something to him having a moment now because of like all the virality and TikTok of people doing like awful AI imitations of Wes Anderson. And so I think this kind of all just hit right at the right moment, and it did pretty well by his standards. 18 million is not bad.
I've liked Wes Anderson's movies, all of them. Mm-hmm. French Dispatch was great. The last one where he talked about on the show, but my standard for these is what Becco 408 did on TikTok, man. I mean, just changing the game. Totally original.
I know.
Not ripping off anyone's style at all.
It's a frustrating thing for people that are interested in the cinematic qualities of a lot of movies. But yeah, Wes Anderson is more than just symmetry and bright colors, I would say. He's a great writer. Both are great satirical writers.
Yes.
And there's so much depth and interest and humanity that's kind of juxtaposed against sometimes these very wooden setups. There's a lot of purpose to it and all of these things. And it's annoying to see, because it is so kind of in, I don't mean this literally primary colors, but because his style is so primarily colored, it's like so easy to replicate. But
pastels.
But it's so hard to actually have the interest and heart that he often does. There have been a few things where he has even had a few movies that felt like someone doing a Wes Anderson movie. Like Darjeeling Limited feels like a parody of a Wes Anderson movie in some ways.
Yeah.
But the one it really works when you're talking about Tenenbaums or Moonrise Kingdom and various others, it works in spite of the sort of obvious aesthetic in addition to it.
Yeah. Me and my wife were... She went and saw this one with me. My in-laws are randomly huge Wes Anderson fans.
Okay.
Father-in-law, who loves metal music, it's pretty much, they go hand in hand. Metal music and Wes Anderson aesthetics. Obviously. I would say that's a pretty obvious, you know?
Yeah.
I correlation used to just to
roll in Pantera on, throw on Rushmore, and just sing Respect Walk over and over again during the Bill Murray scenes.
You know me. Like 1999, it was Marilyn Manson and Fred Astaire. Like that was my life.
Mm-hmm.
Just those two aesthetics.
Obviously. It's just very, obviously.
So funny. It's just it's a very funny thing.
Steve Zissou and Tool. If only that Portuguese guy had done Tool songs instead of David Bowie.
Yeah. Zoe and I were like, we went and saw No Country for Old Men the other week. It was awesome. And he was like, crap.
Wow. But,
like, that's super a hot in take. On Wes Anderson. Yeah. I mean,
that's a real hot take.
Loves Lebowski. I think everything he likes has some kind of comedic tone to it. I think I figured that out. Doesn't do well with a hard drama. Anyway, he was very excited for this. He sat us down 6 weeks ago and was like, all right, let's pick our seats. We're the only ones. It was like beginning of May. It's like, okay, good thing we bought those tickets early because we wouldn't have been able to get into this. It's not like it's Spider-Man or something.
Yeah.
But we got him. He's very excited. We did the Alamo Drafthouse experience. First time I'd done that probably since Tenet, I believe, during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So that was a return to form in an area that I had dearly missed. How was your screening?
Mine was fun. I wanted to Alamo this, but I couldn't make it work. So I went down the street. You know, I've got that little Cinemark right up the street that I see most things at now because like...
The little IMAX one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my go-to. It can be hit or miss in terms of the audiences. Like, you know, we've ranted about this before. COVID broke a lot of our group etiquette. People are used to just sort of pretending they're the only ones there. But this one was fine because I was, in fact, the only one there. So I got a private screening in a little room. I think there was one other person in there, but it was like one of those I couldn't even tell. So it worked out great. Awesome. A little private screening.
Yeah. So my wife and I were talking about this after we saw it. And I'll talk about my father-in-law's review once we dig more into the movie. But we're just talking about the reception of this, the whole week of Wes Anderson on TikTok, that the way that went down. So for those of you who don't know the story, basically people have been trying to remake his style on TikTok, right? And somebody went on TikTok and said, can you imagine being Wes Anderson, working your entire career to establish an identity? And then Becca 408 goes on there and in 5 minutes does your aesthetic, right? And that obviously went viral in the film world. People had a lot of commentary on that. And Wes Anderson's response was, yeah, when people send those to me, I delete them. I don't want it. Which my wife was like, why would you say that? I was like, yeah, that's kind of a good point. Like, why would you not want people talking about you? I guess he's protective over his image and his aesthetic. He didn't want to become a bit. I understand that, but I see it as certainly a great sign of admiration to effort to try to do that. And
he's so obviously stylistic. His style is so, and I don't mean this obvious that it's easy,
but stylized,
it's
like, right?
Yeah. It's so, he's so stylized and so thus very easy to mimic with no, it's
throw a filter on it. Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I hate to boil it down to that, but I mean, people have created Wes Anderson filters for that exact reason. And my response to that was, I understand taking someone's aesthetic, right? Homaging that, creating your version of that. That's fine. Sure. Try creating your own aesthetic.
Right.
That's what Wes Anderson did.
Yeah.
That's all him. Every ounce of this film, Grand Budapest, whatever you want to call it, that came from nothing.
Yeah.
That came from his brain, from the ether, right? So this entire look is because of him. It's not like he ripped it off from something. Of course he's inspired, right? But if you want to like emulate Wes Anderson, create a completely fresh new style of cinema. Right. That's what I would challenge you to do.
That is enduring over 25 years now.
That's more fresh now than it has ever been.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I think the internet, you know, you talk about comparing him to his peers, right? The Spielbergs, the Tarantinos, the Finchers. Wes Anderson's movies do a lot better on the internet than those movies. Yeah. Like,
well, they're
memeable
funny,
moments.
Yeah,
they're you know, sharing, oh, look how great this shot looks, you know, breaking down this movie, talking about the cast, right? I think his films lend themselves to online conversation and more sharing than a lot of movies do.
Yeah, I think he's so undervalued. I mean, he often has a co-writer, but, you know, I think he's so undervalued as a screenwriter too. I mean, he's been nominated a couple times, but that's, to me, what makes his, I mean, maybe that's just my brain. I'm less visual than you, but like, his ear for dialogue and that sort of noir, stilted, but very funny and oftentimes absurd dialogue that he writes is to me the fun part, you know? Like I think about, you know, when I think of Wes Anderson, I think of, you know, a lot of, you know, a lot of people believe that Custer died in the Battle of Little Bighorn, but what this book presupposes is maybe he didn't. Like, I think about lines like that more than like style, you know, the style of, or framing of shots. So he's such an underrated writer, and it's fun to see him in this 1950s world because he has this kind of take on classic film writing. You know, his even movies that are set in current times have a kind of stilted way of, you know, a very Turner Classic Movies way of speaking. And so it's fun to see him kind of be able to lean into that with the time frame of this. So French Dispatch had a bit of that as well, but I thought this was a little more successful in that.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of reviews coming out for this, kind of saying the same bits. And we've repeated this if you've listened to any of our Wes Anderson talks in the past decade. They all have started out the same way, right? Mm-hmm. This is the most Wes Anderson-y Wes Anderson movie so far. And this one's no different, right? Sure. There's an argument to be made that this is the most Wes Anderson-y Wes Anderson movie. And my wife was reading me a quote from, I can't remember, it was New York Post or somebody reviewing this that said something like, Wes Anderson doesn't listen to his critics mm-hmm. enough. He's so caught up in his own thing that he can't get out of it. And my response to that is, do you want Wes Anderson to not be Wes Anderson?
Right.
This is who he is.
And he might miss sometimes, but he hits more than he misses for not listening to any criticism. I'll take that. I'd rather have someone, you know, with their own vision without taking in too much other input. And mm-hmm. maybe they miss one out of three times, but the other two times really hit and are unique than trying to be safe and just kind of make whatever the consensus version of a Wes Anderson movie is.
Or the watered down version.
Right.
Just Wes Anderson, you know, too artsy. Be less artistic here. Like, I just don't see that as ever a possibility. I mean, sure, his movies in the past, Rushmore and maybe even Tenenbaums, wasn't like super in on this aesthetic, but he was figuring out what his aesthetic was at that point still. And Absolutely. Now that he kind of knows what he likes, he's going to lean into that. And so it reminds me of when Dave Grohl, Nirvana, breaks up and he starts the Foo Fighters. People were super angry that they sounded kind of like Nirvana. Mm-hmm. And his response to that was, did you want me to start a reggae band?
Yeah.
Like, this is what I do. This is my thing. Right. Rock and roll with guitars and melodies. Like, I can't do that.
It reminds me, I was in Barcelona a few years ago. This is kind of a highfalutin story. I don't mean it that way at all, but I kind of, when I'm on vacation, I hate everything with like a tour guide. I don't like going and waiting in lines of museums. I just like to go and just like chill in a city. But my wife was like, we have to go. The only thing I want to do is like see the cathedral and go to the Picasso Museum. And obviously Picasso has works all around the world, both in private collections and in galleries and museums all over the world. But Picasso Museum has obviously a large collection of them. And the cool thing about it is that you go through the museum chronologically. And so you kind of see him discover his style. And the stuff that's most Picasso-y, as one would say, if that's an adjective, is like the stuff at the end. It reminds me of this with Wes Anderson. Not that he's at the end, but he has now found his aesthetic, his style, his everything. And instead of tempering back from that, he's just going to make that explode in every frame because that's, you know, that's the choice he's chosen to make. And, you know, when you go through those Picassos, his early stuff is very, it's cool to see him do still lives and very simple things. But once he finds the kind of Cubist style or whatever, it just everything leans into that. So
like Lichtenstein before he found comics, right?
Yeah, for sure.
He's still a good artist, but he didn't have a distinct style.
Yeah.
And then he became Roy Lichtenstein, right?
Yeah,
and absolutely. This, when you see something he did, you automatically recognize it as him, right? When you see a frame of a Wes Anderson movie, no question mm-hmm. whose movie it came from, right? And I think, Wes, lean into it more. I want you to be Wes Anderson. That's what makes you great. So this movie, huge ensemble cast. I was excited for it, Richard, because I'm big UFO sci-fi conspiracy guy. So to hear Wes is going to do this and then set it in like mid-century America in this, I don't know, extremely pastel time to begin with. Mm. I loved that. So when you mix that vintage architecture, those vintage cars, all the clothing with his dialogue, with this kind of cartoony take on this subject matter. I thought it was a great combination. What about you?
Yeah, same. I thought, you know, one of those from the first few frames of the trailer, you're going, oh, this is a cool world for this. When director meets an interesting time and interesting story to insert their aesthetic into it. It was, I loved it. And then the sort of cavalcade of stars starts popping up in the trailer and you go, oh, well, okay, now this is interesting.
Scarlett was talking in the press junket about, like, there were so many people I didn't even know were in it. She's like, I just show up one day and Willem Dafoe's there. I'm like, wow, yeah. Willem Dafoe's in this movie? This is awesome.
it's wild.
It's amazing. I liked that. So he has templates that he kind of uses with his films, right? Mm-hmm. With Tenenbaums, it was the book. Mm-hmm. And you've got the play aspect with Rushmore. And obviously the French Dispatch is the newspaper, mm-hmm. right? So this movie, how did you feel about his breaking the fourth wall in this one? Meaning that this is all basically a play.
Mm-hmm. It was very much surprising to me. I did not know that going in, which is cool. I mean, that's what you want. The trailer did a good job of really teasing this without giving hardly anything away, which I loved. Because I was so kind of startled by that framing device, it's like all I've been thinking about since I've seen it for sure was that. And I think I've come around that I really like it.
I think it makes it so much more than what it would be on the surface of a trailer, right? It gives you this other whole nother reason to go dig in and see what Wes is trying to say there.
Because I see someone put this up in like 20 years.
Right.
Like take that part out and do it as a play. Be kind of cool.
That would be interesting. Yeah. I think this definitely could work in that way. I love the framing device of Cranston there and Edward Norton and that whole, the way they shot that with the old theater, I thought was really special. And then it starts to make sense why this world, this asteroid city world is so plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like a Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
It does. Very good.
If they like made one at Six Flags or something, like those weird facades that they put up at Six Flags to make you feel like you're in the cartoon. That's what it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved that. And here was my father-in-law's main criticism. He said, I would have liked the movie a lot more if it was just an asteroid city and they didn't cut to the play.
Okay.
I said, then it wouldn't have been the movie. That was the movie. That was the point of this, was that it was a play.
No.
So absolutely. It kept him from enjoying it. It actually enhanced my enjoyment.
But it is, to his point, I think it is jarring at first. You're kind of, it does take you out of it a bit. But in 2023, that's an interesting framing device, I think. You know, postmodernism here. So having that kind of stuff is, I think, cool if you do it well.
Yeah, it's like, why can't he just make a movie set in the 50s, right? There always has to be some kind of twist to that concept with him, which I think makes him a really interesting filmmaker, but I think he would have just preferred, like, oh, I just rather have had it been a normal story. And I totally can see that. I was very excited for Schwartzman to be starring in this because
been a while.
I think he's a great leading man if used correctly in the right role. And Wes Anderson recognized that, obviously. Right. Or playing off Tim Robinson. But I thought he was great here.
Guy here now.
I thought he was great here. I thought the casting overall was really spot on.
It was.
There was only one person I thought was miscast, and I'm curious to see if you thought it was the same person I did.
Was it Hanks?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of a weird... Hanks isn't a weird part of his career. He seems miscast in everything lately. I don't know if it's so... He's so iconographic. You know, unless he's like a submarine captain in 1941, he seems odd in things, very suddenly. And it's not that he's giving bad performances. I don't know what it is, but he's in a weird... I think it's like he is... Part of it is he is perpetually 45 in everyone's brain, and now he's 65, and so it's weird when he's... But you understand intellectually that, of course, he's going to play older parts, but something about him should always be... He has kind of a youthful, but also... old-timey way of speaking. I don't know. Something about him is he's not pulling off this last era of his career as you would certainly think he would. And I don't know if it's just a weird thing of genetics or or history with him or what. I don't know what it is.
There are some actors that just fit like a glove into this world.
Yeah.
I mean, you can put him, Jeffrey Wright, you know, put him in there. It's great.
Gene Hackman.
Carell, you know, put him in this one and he was great.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something about Hanks that he just didn't elevate the material beyond what was on the page. I kept thinking to myself, like, if that role was Bill Murray, that would have been such a more memorable part of the movie.
He looked cool. Tom Hanks looked cool.
Yeah, he looked great.
Yeah.
Cool. Cool hair, right?
Yeah, the hair was cool. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. I had the exact same thought. It just felt, and I felt that the last, I mean, I felt it going back to like The Post. Suddenly, everything he's doing seems like an impression of Tom Hanks doing a movie or something in everything. Mm. And then you add it to something so stylized like this, and it's just even more jarring.
Yeah, good point. So, love Schwartzman. We get ScarJo. What did you think about their relationship, the relationship between Schwartzman and Tom Hanks with the mother who had passed away and the daughters and that whole aesthetic? That was my favorite part of the movie, was the daughters' dialogue. I thought that was great. First thing I said to my wife as we left, I said, I bet Wes Anderson has daughters, because you can't write that good a dialogue for kids and not have kids, right?
Yeah, going
and
back
and we looked it up, and yeah, he had a daughter in 2017, I think.
Yeah.
So right about that age, it makes total sense.
Even before he had them, right? Moonrise Kingdom, things like that. He's always written kids pretty well.
Yeah, he has. Yeah.
Because there's some, I don't know, there's something about his writing that kids can deliver really well.
This just felt like, you're right. Even not the lead like dialogue, but just the off the cuff.
Right.
Like what did she say? Like a minute is 32,000 hours or something, like 32,000 miles. Things like that had to have been something like his kids said.
Yeah.
And he just put it in there because it was funny, because it's so accurate. And I thought the field trip kids were great as well.
Yeah. Agreed. Schwartzman was great. Again, haven't seen him as a lead in something like this in a long time. So it was fun to see him, you know, beyond just a supporting role. Scarlett is, you know, she's such a natural, I don't mean to reduce her to this because she's proven to be way more, but it's fun to see her do this in that classic Hollywood sense of like that ultimate kind of femme fatale.
Oh, I loved it.
She fits in. She's, you know, she's just got that natural charisma on that front, and she shouldn't do that every role, but it's always fun to see her bust out that move whenever she can. Just like, you know, on the male side, it's like, it's fun to watch like Brad Pitt be hot in a movie, you know, it's like, it's fine. And not just that they're hot, but then like the chemistry that creates with all the other kind of fluster of Jason Schwartzman and all of that, that creates natural organic comedy and drama and steaminess and everything you would want. So that worked really well. I loved Tilda Swinton in this. She was really cool.
Adrian Brody popped up.
Yeah, Adrian Brody and Norton are both, they'll pop up in these from time to time, and they're good.
I forgot Adrian Brody was in it until I like went home and started the press junket. I was like, why is Adrian Brody in this press junket?
Yeah.
Was he in the movie? Completely forgot he was in it.
Loved seeing Matt Dillon too.
Yes. We talked about him on the Outsiders, did we do?
Yeah.
Maybe something like that. About how, this is a guy who is so talented. Why is he not used more?
And this was great. A couple weeks ago, I was driving home from New Mexico, and I put on the in my ears. Sarah and Jude were asleep, and I listened to Downey. Robert Downey was on the Dax podcast, Dax Shepard's podcast, and he was talking about that whole era of guys that Dylan was the one that they all thought was like going to be the one.
When you watch the movie, when you watch The Outsiders, like this guy. I mean, Rob Lowe's fine. Yeah, you know,
it's funny too. It's that thing of high. You know. Every once in a while you hang out with someone, or I'll see someone that like was like a cool alpha when I was like 15, you know, and maybe sometimes they still are. And sometimes they're like total losers, but I still like revere them. Like you fit back into that mode from when you were 15 and like, wow, that's so-and-so so cool. My wife's like, that guy's a loser. And not that Matt Dillon's a loser by any means, but I just mean that same effect as you, when you listen to Robert Downey and talk about Matt Dillon, it's like, he still like thinks Matt Dillon's like the biggest, like a way bigger star than him.
Yeah.
It's like, bro, you were Tony Stark.
That's so funny. Gosh, we watched Tropic Thunder. My wife had never seen it.
See, Sarah's never seen it either. I need to show her.
2 weeks ago. And I swear I laughed.
It's very funny.
Just as hard this time as I ever have.
Yeah.
It makes me laugh every single time.
Yeah.
When Jack Black running out of the drugs kills me. And the way he plays that throughout the movie just is so effing funny. Oh my God. All right. Yeah. Scarlett Johansson, you're right. There's a scene in this where they go back to the play, the black and white stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think she's sitting in a train car or something, maybe. I just thought to myself, I was like, man, Alfred Hitchcock would have just loved Scarlett Johansson. Sure. What a classic. Norman Rockwell, if he would have painted a movie star.
Right.
That's what it would. She just fits the almost porcelain doll aspect of it. Can fit in any era of movies, I think.
Just to anger you now, I'm only going to refer to her hereafter as Scarlett Johansson.
Pretty smart for call it. The one smart thing he's ever done.
All right. What did you think of, the kind of how this, not just the play reveal interspaced, but how do you think of how it all came together with the epilogue and all of that?
I thought that was a great scene. I had seen chatter online about the Margot Robbie moment. I didn't know that how that would play. I thought that was the best way they could have explained all this, right? And why this emotion is the way it is, why Schwartzman was acting the way he was, why Johansson was acting the way she was, right? What the motivations behind these actual people are. It was such a short moment, like a what, 5-minute scene, maybe? Mm-hmm. Not even that. But it just set everything in context so well. And I see that as really like the thesis of the movie scene.
Yeah.
What a great moment. So like for me to imagine this movie without any of those moments, it's hard for me to do. So it makes it so much more than just, oh, we're hanging out in 1950s. Look at this weird alien, guys. Yeah. Oh, look how quirky we are. You know, like actually puts it into some real intellect.
Yeah.
And so that is great. What'd you think about the satire of the UFO story? See something, cover it up, never talk about it. That whole aspect of it I thought was really interesting, especially with the timing right now.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It reminded me very much, and I mean this with the highest of high praise, you know this. This is not a critique whatsoever. It reminded me of a Simpsons episode at points.
Yeah.
It had a very
kind of like the monorail episode. Yeah.
But just the way they handled the UFOs and all that, and even kind of this, the look of it is kind of Simpsons-y with a lot of yellows in there and things like that.
But I didn't even catch that. Yeah, that's
the whole time of the alien stuff, I was thinking Simpsons for some reason.
That's a good point. I loved how he did that animation.
Yeah.
The choices he makes, I'm going to do this in animated, or, I'm going to do this as a miniature instead, I think are moments of genius. Having the little Roadrunner be a puppet was great. I thought that alien, the way the alien came out of the UFO and the little tripod thing that came out and the way it extends out and all these little pieces start to come out, I was just like, man, you just see Wes Anderson in every frame of this. Because you could just see him telling the guy, okay, I want this to come out like this at this angle. And I want, only that guy can kind of think of those little things. And then to like have one small moment backstage where you see Goldblum as the alien was incredible too.
Cracked me up. Got an out loud laugh out of me.
Yeah. When the alien poses with the meteor, that's like the moment of the movie. That was so good.
It was hilarious. We're getting more Wes this year, right?
He's doing a 30-minute Netflix something.
Oh, is that what that is? Okay. The Roald Dahl thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's apparently being done now, or he's doing that this fall.
Okay.
But it came out this past weekend that his next movie is with Benicio. And it's a father-daughter.
Speaking of ScarJo, that's one of the best Hollywood stories ever. Makes you like both of them a lot.
Right.
Our listeners can Google that.
Benicio is awesome. Yes. He was great in French Dispatch. I'm excited to see what he does it again. It's his father-daughter espionage story. So maybe a little, kind of Paper Moon tone or something. Yeah. I could see.
That'd be cool.
That'd be pretty interesting. Would you love Wes Anderson to do, though? Like, if he could take on any kind of
Would like him to do nothing I've ever heard of. That's the answer to that. Like, I don't need to see Wes Anderson's Spider-Man or anything like that. Like,
I'm not talking. I mean, like, what era of history would you like to see?
Oh, man. I don't know.
I would love to see him do, like, a Civil War era movie.
Yeah. Yes.
With, like, muskets.
Gladiator
and,
3.
Campfires and pre-industrial America would be an interesting thing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't mind trying. I think he could do something cool with like the hippie 60s.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of stuff, but he writes cool, interesting, fun stories, and wherever those happen to be set, I'm here for it going forward. Like I said, he does not bat 1,000 with me, at least, but when he does, they're always my favorite movies of the year, and you know, just keep taking swings, man. And he hits, you know, he hits 750 or something. It's not like he makes a lot of schlock.
So where would you rank this compared to his most recent
movies? So I'm a little, and I don't know if it's just my age or, you know, you and I are kind of a perfect generation for him, because I first started watching him like my freshman year of high school. I think I saw Rushmore and then Tenenbaums the next year, and mm-hmm. Off and Running, right? Bottle Rocket, I went back and saw later in high school retroactively, but we're a pretty good era. I prefer, on the whole, the earlier stuff. I think a lot of people like the last five or so more, but I'm a Tenenbaums and Rushmore guy, Zizou even. But all that to say, see, I'm not as high as Moonrise Kingdom as a lot of people, though, as well. I would say Tenenbaums is probably my one. Budapest is probably my number two, though. That's the more recent one that I love just so much. And then Rushmore is probably three, and maybe this number four.
Yeah.
For me.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. Rushmore is like a top 10 of all time for me. So that's number one. Then Tenenbaums. Moonrise Kingdom and Grand Budapest are kind of neck and neck for me now. Maybe it's just because I spent time in Boy Scouts. So that one.
Yeah.
It's really a lovely movie. Hits Moonrise like is a childhood great, but tone.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I get it. Totally.
Grand Budapest is the one that I think most people I talk to in my daily life say is their favorite. I love his animated movies too. I like Isle of Dogs and Fantastic Mr. Fox as the well. But this is like, I mean, this is like top five Wes material, I think.
It's really good.
To your point earlier, I could not believe he wrote this himself.
Well, he did it with Roman Coppola.
Well, the story, but the screenplay, like the dialogue. Yeah. I can't believe one person can come up with
he's a great dialogue.
All of that, right?
He's got some of my favorite quotes in history are Wes Anderson lines. And that, to me, that's so much more his story than, you know, symmetrical framing. The thing that's great about Budapest, I wanted to say, he writes such great ensemble movies. And not to take away anything from the supporting cast of Budapest, but it's pretty awesome just to give Ralph Fiennes just all the best lines in that and just let him cook. It's, you know what I mean? Like, that is such a showcase for Ralph Fiennes, and it's unique for Wes to do that, and it's so cool.
That one's held up extremely well, too. I remember walking out of that one and just being like, oh my God, that's one of the best movies I've ever seen. Yeah. You know, it was just unbelievable in the theater. It was. All right.
Did we see that together?
I saw it in, I don't think so. I saw it in Fort Worth when I was
I saw still it in Alamo, college. The Alamo and Richardson, we used to do events at, because I have a picture on one of my first Instagram pictures is me and Sarah in like the, they had like a setup where you could get in the costumes for it. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, I saw that recently.
I did get a cool lunchbox from Alamo, an Asteroid City lunchbox with the thermos.
Nice.
I love his art. So, you know, it's cool to have his art on things. You don't see a lot of Wes Anderson action figures out there, right?
No,
so,
you don't.
Got to get the merchandising when it's available.
What's the great Christopher Guest? These are, is it the Remains of the Day action figures or lunchbox? There's two at the end of Guffman where he's selling memorabilia.
And my buddy has a record label here in Dallas, and I want him so bad to do the Mighty Wind record with No Hole in It.
Oh, yeah.
Punch your own hole.
He absolutely should.
Like, actually make the record with no hole in it and tell people I would to punch buy their it. Own. Yeah. So many people would buy it just to have it and see, like, punch your own hole.
That's the Folksmen, right, that are doing that one?
Yeah.
Them? Yeah.
See, it didn't sell well because you had to punch your own hole. Oh, great. All right.
Can we just get Mascots was so not it, and it's a bummer, but can we just get one more Chris Guest movie? That's great.
Man, is it even worth doing Christopher Guest movies without Fred Willard, though? Come on.
It is tough. I mean, that's definitely a great thing that they had. Not that there's so many funny characters in them, but it was great where you could just put the camera on Fred Willard and be like, hey, be funny for 8 minutes. And he always could.
What would you grade Asteroid City at? Richard. And what was your favorite scene? Actually, my favorite scene was the song that the kids sang.
Oh, that was it? Really? Because that's not Rupert. The one you texted me about.
with Rupert Friend.
Yeah.
Who is also very well cast and looks like he could have been a 1950s country singer.
I loved all the stuff with Carell. Was probably my favorite. The hotel manager stuff.
Oh, the little vending machines he had. The cocktail vending machine. How cool was that, man?
That was awesome. So that was probably my favorite.
Yeah.
Great. I'm going to give this... just a solid A for now. What about you, buddy?
Yeah, same. Solid A. Kay. Might be an A plus at some point.
It could go up. I could be surprised if it went down, but right now, probably my favorite of the year. But we're early.
That's what I told my wife, that it was the best movie I'd seen this year. She's like, really? I'm like, yeah, it's not a great indication. It's not a great year so far in terms
of. We haven't seen Joker 2 yet, though, bro.
I have not. But I have seen another movie that I want to talk about and weekly recommend, so let's do that.
Boom, let's do it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Weekly recommends.
So I saw a movie this past week. Had been meaning to see it in the theater, but I don't think it's out in the theaters anymore. Finally watched Beau's Afraid.
Oh yeah.
And man, what a what a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly like up there with this in terms of my favorite of the year. I just think Ari Aster is so talented. I mean, I'd have never seen, maybe since Spielberg, like somebody use the camera and editing like he does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fantastic. It's like he has the like the instincts of Spielberg, but like the mind of Kubrick.
Yeah.
So you get this extremely like obvious camera work with this kind of dark undertone to it. And I just love it. So I don't know if you watched this yet. Have you?
I have not yet. No.
I'm interested to see what you think of Joaquin's performance, because it's certainly, in my opinion, one of his best.
I mean, he's got some good ones, so that's the high praise.
Yeah.
That's
it's
awesome.
It's not like Arthur Fleck level, but it's up there.
Fleck Nation.
I'm very interested to see like how this movie holds up throughout the year, though, and... if it gets any awards buzz or anything like that, because it kind of came and went in the theaters, and it's such a big movie, kind of like the Everything Everywhere, like the scale of it is huge. So
Nathan Lane, dude,
wait till you see Nathan Lane. You're going to be like, this guy's my favorite actor of all time. Yeah,
he's so good.
Just wait. I'm excited for you to see it. So Beau's Afraid, now out on digital. Third movie, full-length movie from Ari Aster.
Yeah.
And I think he's got some problems with his mom. Go talk to your mom, Ari. Call your mom, see how she's doing. I see a theme here with all of these. Check them out. Check it out, Beau's Afraid, now available. What's your recommend, Richard?
Mine is a TV show that's back for season 2, and that is The Bear.
Nice.
Yeah, one of the best. Got some insane cameos this year, which sometimes these shows get when they have a good first year. But none of them take you out of it at all. They're just really good. And I loved it. You know, it's a great, God, it'll make you hungry. But to me, it's similar. It's like, I relate it almost, the tension is almost Curb Your Enthusiasm-ish sometimes. Like it's so, but like manic. It's just a really interesting show in terms of pace and editing and writing. And they did not sophomore slump. This season's awesome. So The Bear season 2 on Hulu, FX, you know, wherever it is.
I saw somebody online do like a fake bear segment where they did like The Bear, but it's Kraft mac and cheese. That's, and, yeah, and somebody's that, yeah. making like,
what do you way, do first? Chef,
open the timer, box. Chef. Open the box what? Open the box, chef. Thank yeah. you. Yeah. It's pretty That's good. Funny. My recommend is I Was Afraid.
So nice.
I already did it. All right. Brian's recommend is Hereditary. I want yeah. all you guys to watch and experience that. So check that
Let's
out.
Let's get that up on the social. Hereditary. Yep. For sure.
Well, have a great 4th of July, Richard. This weekend is...
You're renovating a bathroom. Jealous?
No. This weekend is Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it is.
And so go out, see that with the fam. Have a good time. Celebrate America if you're in America. And if not, celebrate America anyway. You know?
Yeah, we don't do anything wrong. So just celebrate America. Yeah. 100%
approval. Next, by the way, we have a retrospective episode out on the VIP with Batman, Shane, Richard, and Brian talking Indiana Jones, the previous films. So check that out.
The rare moment, Kent, you weren't on it. Brian acknowledged that there's 4.
I'm going to have to double check that because I don't believe you. We'll be talking about all that next week as we dive into more Indiana Jones talk. But for Richard, I'm Kent. We love you. Talk to you soon. Goodbye.
See you.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. Salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.